The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Bright Side Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side. Thanks for listening. Hey, this week we talk about 45 minutes of comics. John's really excited about some of the speculations, and we have quite a few recommendations this week. And then we get into Netflix's season 2 of Punisher. There's no spoiler-free talk. We get right into it. There's even a little bit of controversy, too. So let's get right to it and head on into the store. All right. Hey, John. How you doing?
Oh, man. I was great, but I got over it.
Have you been preparing that response all week?
Yep.
That was the quickest you've replied to me since we've started. Usually there's a gap in there, and it's like, good. Did you have to write it down?
I did not write it down.
Oh,
but
good. You memorized it.
But I set it in front of a mirror for a half an hour.
Yeah,
make sure I didn't forget.
For podcasting. You wanted to look good while you were doing it.
I didn't want my delivery to be off.
Right, yeah. No, that was really good.
No, man, I'm doing good. Had a good week, so.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I don't want to alienate our listeners any further, but I had a really good Sunday.
Oh, jeez.
I don't want to drive anybody away.
Hey,
but
speaking of that, it's we're not going to alienate listeners talking about. I'm hearing all these people talk about what a horrible game it was.
It was not a great game, honestly.
I thought it was a great game. Because
I didn't. I was bored during most of it.
See, but I love defense.
Well, I do too, but this was like 3-3 in 8 minutes into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
It was pretty.
That's a good close game. It's like, so what's the difference between 3-3 and 28-28? It doesn't really change anything. They're both close games.
More excitement, though. You know, you're seeing more happen.
Well, that's if you consider stopping somebody as nothing is happening.
Right.
But the defense is making plays. So, you know what I mean? That's what
I get it. I mean, it's the same as, you know, you could say in baseball that everybody loves a good pitcher's duel, but nobody loves a 0-0 game. You know what I mean? It's
right.
People like offense. People like excitement. You know, I love the result, but I didn't think it was a great game. I thought it was terrible commercials. I thought there was a terrible halftime show, and I thought the game was kind of slow.
I didn't even watch the halftime show.
But I can't, obviously I can't complain about the end result because, you know.
See, that's the thing is if you have a dog.
I'm a fan.
If you have a dog in the fight, you want a blowout with your team blowing out the other team. That's a great game if you have a dog in the fight.
Well, not necessarily, though. Like, I thought last year's game, even though we lost, was a great game. You know, it came down to the last 2 minutes, and it was a, you know, high-scoring game. Both teams threw for 500 yards of, you know, offense, and I thought it was great. The year before, you know, we're down 28-3 and come back, and that was super exciting. And I don't know. They were just much better games than I thought this game was. But
yeah, see, I would argue that this year's game was just like last year's game. Last year's game had inept defense. This year's game had inept offense.
Right.
You know, as opposed to what's a really bad game is when a team blows somebody out like 49-3.
Right. I didn't want to see that. And, you know, again, even being a Patriots fan or whatever, you know, I didn't want to see him win like 49-3 or something because that's no fun either. But,
so,
you know, you want it to be interesting both ways. I love it when the games come down to a field goal in the last 30 seconds, which happens way more than it should in the NFL.
Yeah.
But it happens, seems like, multiple times every week. But to me, that's fun. You know, you could win or lose at the last second, and, you know, it's very exciting. You know.
Yeah.
I guess this could have come down to the same thing, really. You know, you could have won or lost by a field goal.
Yeah, it almost did. It almost did. So, actually, you being a Patriots fan down there in Houston, how does that play with your customers?
I don't make a secret of it.
Do you show?
No, I don't gloat. I don't gloat at all, but I don't make a secret of it. you know, when people come in, you know, obviously the Astros were in the playoffs last year against the Red Sox, and I was rooting for the Red Sox, but, you know, I had the games on the TV, so when people come in and they say, oh, man, the Astros aren't doing so great, I'll be like, well, that's good for me because I'm a Red Sox fan. But but when the series was over, I don't rub it in anybody's face or gloat about it. I might wear a hat to work or something,
though. You don't
hang
a big banner outside the store?
No. I don't want to run off potential customers.
Exactly.
But
that's funny.
But, yeah, you know, I wore my Patriot shirt around all day Sunday, and, you know, people look at me and they, you know, like, oh, man, you're one of those. I say, yep, I am, but.
Yeah, you've been down there a long time.
I've got a big license plate on my car. It's Patriots and a big Red Sox sticker on there. So I don't make any secret about it. And I park right in front of the door at the store so everybody that walks in can see it. But. Other than that, I don't gloat. I just park my car right in front of the door with my big Red Sox and Patriots stickers on.
Your store. Why wouldn't you park there anyways?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Enough
welcome
gloating.
Back to Sports Radio.
Yeah,
on.
Exactly. All right. So you ready to get into some comics?
Yeah. All right. I'm always ready.
I know. All right. What am I going to be spending my money on this week?
All right, so this week's Speculator books, there's just a couple to talk about. I've actually mentioned two of these previously on FOC when we talked about them. So just so you know, the things I talk about sometimes come to fruition. Because I did talk about Female Furies number one, the Francesco Mattina variant. And like I predicted, it is outselling their main cover, probably 2-1. And you know, selling for a couple dollars over cover price. So that's one to look out for. It's a really good-looking cover. Big Barda is on there, and it turned out really well.
Nice.
And then Harley Quinn number 58, the Derek Chu variant. Again, talked about this, told everybody to go out and order it, told you that it was going to be hot. Hopefully you listened, because it is selling now for $15. You could have had it for $3.99 if you listened to me and went into your store and ordered it at FOC.
Jeez.
Actually, you could
have
had
it
for...
Do you have a license plate for these two? Speaking of gloating.
Actually, you could have had it for $3.99 minus 10%.
Right.
If you mentioned that you heard it here on our podcast. So,
right.
I'm not trying to gloat. I'm just trying to let everybody know that
naturally.
when I go down to the FOC notes in a little while, that maybe pay attention to some of these things, because once again, I sold out of this book today and I had people looking for it, even though I put a post on Twitter and Facebook telling everybody to come in and order it. And I talked about it here on this podcast. So, but like I said, it was hot today. It's sold out and a lot of people are looking for it. And Magical Beatdown number one. Now, this is one I didn't talk about at all. I had actually never even heard of it. It's from Silver Sprocket Comics, who, again, I have to admit I've never heard of. but this book is selling for about $20, and it is sold out. So, again, with these smaller press books, they sell out very quickly because a lot of people don't order them, and the publishers don't really overprint because, you know, it's lost money for them to overprint and have these books not get ordered. So some of these books do go up in value just because they're rare. And I would be hard-pressed to think of many stores that have this sitting on their shelves. But if you can come across a copy of it, it's worth picking up because $15 to $20 today, and it's probably just going to go up from there. And that's it as far as this week's Speculator books. There weren't really a whole bunch of them that came out today. So we'll move right into our back issue bonus. I've got quite a few to talk about this week. The first one is the Superman Batman Annual number 4. So this is the first appearance of Batman Beyond in the DCU. So about a week ago, we got some speculation that they're working on a Batman Beyond animated film, you know, to kind of ride the coattails of the success of Into the Spider-Verse.
Now there's a lot of talk that that's false. But then,
then
there's a lot of talk that they're going to go forward with something. So,
right.
I don't know.
It may or may not happen. We don't know. That's why they're, you know, speculator topics. But This book is back in the spotlight. It seems to be going for about $60 right now. So like you said, if it turns out that the movie doesn't go forward, this may drop in value somewhat. But it's still always going to be the first appearance of Batman Beyond in the DCU. And Batman Beyond, you know, still has a monthly comic book. He's not going anywhere. So it may take a hit, but I don't think it'll drop significantly if the movie doesn't happen.
So do you know, how did they work him in to the story?
Couldn't tell you. Honestly, I'm not sure. I don't have a copy of this, and I don't remember
because
if I've read it or
Batman
not.
Batman Beyond is supposed to be, like, after Batman retired. So did they, like, do a time jump or something? I didn't read it. I know the animated series, which is great.
Right.
And this is, the 20th anniversary of it. But
yeah, this is the 20th anniversary of the show. I'm not sure. I'm going to show a little comic ignorance when it comes to that because I don't know. I mean, I've read some of the Batman Beyond comics, and they take place in the same time frame as the animated show did, so how they actually worked them into the DCU, I'm not 100% sure, but it was probably some kind of time travel or crisis or something going on that, you know, time is fluid in comics.
Exactly.
So these characters all seem to have a way to meet up with each other. You know, here coming up pretty soon, we're going to have Conan meeting up with the Avengers, so if they want to make it happen, they'll figure out a way to make it happen.
I'm going to look into that for next week, see what we got.
Yeah, you could tell us. Okay, second one from Oni Press. This book came out in 2009. It's Stump Town number 1. Again, I really didn't know anything about this book, but last week ABC announced that it picked this title up for a series. And, you know, as we talk about every time that happens, the book is shot up in value. You know, selling for around $30 right now. Same thing, you know, just because it's been optioned, if the show doesn't go forward, who knows what's going to happen with this book. But right now it's pretty hot. So go out and try to find yourself a copy of that. This one used to hang around in dollar bins because it wasn't worth a whole lot. So if stores aren't on top of this stuff, you may be able to find it, still hanging around for a couple of bucks. So, Black Canary and Oracle, Birds of Prey one-shot. This came out in 1996. You know, again, we had the teaser a week or so ago for the Birds of Prey movie, and that's what's behind, you know, this book here. This is the first Birds of Prey appearance. So, it's, you know, that movie is definitely happening. It's not a rumor.
No, yeah.
So, this book should continue to stay hot for a long time. $50 to $60 is what it's going to cost you right now to pick that up. So
the talk on that movie is a lot of people sound like that it isn't going to be good. And I think it has a really good opportunity to almost, you know, blow up. I think a lot of those characters, most of the general public doesn't know much about.
And
they have a lot of room to grow right there. And if they make a quality movie, it could really blow up for DC.
There's been different versions of Huntress and Black Canary on TV a few times.
Yeah.
You know, we had a Birds of Prey series in the early 2000s that had both of those characters.
Yeah.
It only ran for one season, so a lot of people may not remember that.
It's on the DC
universe. They've been all over the animated series. You've had both of those characters, and even in the Arrowverse now you have Huntress and Canary, so
yeah.
People do know of these characters somewhat, but you know, the mainstream movie brings in so many more people than even a TV
show. That's what I mean. It's like, I mean, you think of the popularity of just the Arrowverse, it's nothing compared to a mainstream movie. And if this could do, you know, especially a female driven movie like this, I think it has a lot of room to grow, and it could be
fun. I'm in the minority, I'm sure, but I really liked the Birds of Prey TV series. I actually just watched it again on DC Universe, and I thought it was a pretty good show. It's too bad it didn't go forward.
Yeah, it was. I don't think it ages very well. It was good.
It was definitely a '90s show.
If you watch it now, it looks like a really cheap CW show.
Well, but... I just watched Flash again also, the 90s Flash, and it doesn't age very well either. So a lot of these things don't. In 20 years, the Arrowverse probably won't have aged very well either. But what I liked about the Birds of Prey series is...
We started talking football. You don't have to worry about a tangent. Right.
But they weren't afraid to show characters. Like, nowadays, it's like they're afraid to show Batman in costume on a TV show. But, hell, we had Batman in costume in the credits.
Right.
Of that show. You had Batgirl in costume. Like, you had all these characters just running around, and they weren't afraid to use them. And I thought that was really cool. You had the Joker. Whereas nowadays, if you did that show, you'd never see any of those characters.
Right.
On there. So, I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. But, anyway, to get back on track, Silver Surfer Annual number 6. This is the first appearance of Genus Vell. So, you know, he's probably going to make an appearance in the Captain Marvel movie. All the Kree characters are showing up in that, as far as we know. So this one may or may not see a spike, but it's selling for about $15 right now. So for $15, it's not, you know, it's worth taking a chance on. Even if he does show up in the movie, he's not going to be a major character, so I wouldn't expect this thing to triple in price. But all those, just like, you know, we saw all the Spider-Verse first appearances starting to go up. All of these Kree characters and characters that could show up in Captain Marvel are starting to see a little bit of attention and go up also. Talked about this book before, The Immortal Hulk number 2. First appearance of Dr. Fry. I still don't know who Dr. Fry is or what the significance of this character is. But, again, this book has seen another big jump in price. It was selling in the $20 to $25 range. Now it's $50. And I see people on Facebook looking to buy copies of this almost every day. So I've read these books, and I still don't know what the significance of that character is, but people are really, really looking for it. Even the second prints of that are selling for $15 to $20, which is unheard of for a second printing to be going for that much. So some people obviously know something that I don't as far as why this character is going to be important, but this book is on fire right now, so that's really the only reason why I wanted to bring it up again, because it's doubled in price just in the last 3 months or so. Dark Knight's Metal, Batman the Red Death number 1. This was already one of the more popular spinoff titles that came out of Dark Knight's Metal, but 2 weeks ago they teased his appearance on the Flash TV show. Mm-hmm. So don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not, but this book is now selling for about $35. If he does make an appearance on the show, it could probably jump again. This was about a $15 or $20 book already, so, you know, it's almost doubled in price just because of his mention on The Flash. So, again, if this is something that you want, and it's a great book anyways, if you haven't read Dark Knight's Metal or read The Red Death, it's actually really an awesome book. So I would love to see this character show up somewhere on The Flash show. That would be awesome. And then the last book as far as back issue books, again, this wasn't a cheap book to start with, but Why the Last Man, issue number 1. It's a Vertigo comic from 2002. They've been talking about this becoming a TV show for quite a long time, but it was just announced the other day that it has officially been picked up for a series order, and a pilot, you know, is being filmed. So this book is going to stay hot for quite a while because it should be a great TV show. It's a really good story. If you haven't read it, I recommend it. Ungraded copies of this are selling for about $200. So it's not cheap, but again, it's got a high ceiling if this takes off as a TV show. Look at like what happened with The Walking Dead. And this has a long, you know, this could potentially become a long-running TV show. There's 150 issues or so of the comic, so there's a lot of material to mine. And they could go for years with this, so potential is definitely there for this to be a long-term thing. And that's it as far as our back issue books.
Who did you say picked that up?
I'm not sure. I don't remember who ordered the pilot. But it was all over comic book resources and all the websites and Twitter a couple of days ago. So, all right. So, moving on into our final order cutoff. Again, some books to pay attention to. As far as the DC variant covers go, shame on DC, because when I looked this afternoon, there were no covers available for any of their variant books this today for this week, so I wasn't able to see any of them. I did see late this afternoon the artwork for the Harley Quinn B cover, and it's done by Art Germ, Stanley Lau, and it looks awesome, just like all his covers do. So without having seen any of the other ones, I do recommend going in to pick up the Harley Quinn B cover for this week. DC also has no new series on the FOC this week, so as far as DC goes, it was pretty quiet. Marvel, however, has a few different books. This is Spidey Villains variant month for Marvel. So three of them that look particularly good are the Avengers number 16, the Greg Hildebrandt variant, Champions number 3, Mike McCone variant, and Conan the Barbarian number 4, Mark Brooks variant. And again, these are all Spidey Villain variant covers. So there are a couple of other ones, but those are the three that stood out to me as being particularly good covers. So those are the ones I would look at if you want to order those. We all know Spider-Man's a fairly popular character, so should be a lot of people looking for these covers.
Yeah.
new series from Marvel. We've got Age of X-Man, Prisoner X number 1. This is the continuing Age of X-Man. There's like six different miniseries going on right now with Age of X-Man. But being a number one issue from Marvel, as always, there's a whole bunch of variant covers. The one that stands out is the In-Hyuk Lee variant. So I would take a look at that. As far as other new series, we've got Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History. That's number one of a six-issue miniseries. We've got Domino Hotshots, number one of a five-issue miniseries. So this is the same team. The Domino series just ended. It was only a 12-issue run, but this is the exact same writer and artist that are basically moving on into this miniseries. Domino was a really fun series. Was one of my favorites, so I look forward to this. And again, there's quite a few good covers for that. Meet the Skrulls, number one. This is also a five-issue miniseries. Just capitalizing on Captain Marvel and trying to get the Skrulls out there. I don't know how popular this is going to be, honestly. I don't know if we need a Skrulls series, especially, but it's out there. And another one that I'm actually pretty excited for is Star Wars Vader Dark Visions, number one, which is going to be a five-issue miniseries. So all of those are new from Marvel, and you know, again, they've all got multiple cover options, so go in and get your store to pull those up for you. From Dynamite Comics, we have the $6 Million Man, number one. If you listen to last week's rant about the Lone Ranger, you realize that DJ and I are not young men. So
I've already got my $6 Million Man subscription.
Yeah, so the $6 Million Man is a book, is a TV show that we grew up on.
I can't wait.
Nowadays, this guy would be, you know, he doesn't compare to the superheroes that we see nowadays. And it would probably be like the $6 Billion Man.
I was just going to say, $6 million doesn't get you as much nowadays.
Yeah, $6 million doesn't get you two legs, an arm, and an eye.
Right.
In today's economy. But
you're lucky if you got an eye.
Yeah. But, you know, the nostalgia is there.
Yeah.
You know, for anybody that's our age that grew up on this show. You know, it was one of my favorites. I couldn't wait to watch it on Sunday nights.
You know,
and then once you had the Bionic Woman, and then you had them back to back.
Yeah,
that was like, you know, the greatest thing ever. It was kind of like the Fantasy Island Love Boat combo.
I was just
going to
say, are they going to do a Fall Guy too?
Right. Oh man, the Fall Guy, that would be awesome. and TJ Hooker. We get all of our.
I'm telling you though, it's like not to go back over it again, but that the Lone Ranger one though, it just, you know, I had the $6 million man action figure too.
Oh yeah,
which,
me too.
Which was that I never, you had to look through the back of his head. Remember?
I know.
See through the eye. Yeah. Like, it's blown out through the back. Which was great when you were a kid, but you're like, what the heck is this?
But, well, then you had that rubber skin that rolled up on the arm so you could pull the bionics out. You could, and the rubber skin always got all brown and nasty.
Well, yeah, because
it didn't really hold up.
Yeah, because
you were constantly, rolling it up and down.
Well, yeah, because you played with it all week, but bath night was like Wednesday and Sunday, so you're filthy all week long.
And then he had the little the car engine, and you cranked the button on the back, and his arm would ratchet up.
Yep.
Yeah, those are the toys we had to play with. Yeah. You know, not to go way out on a tangent, but I had the playset that was his rocket that turned into the operating room, which was awesome, except that was like a 45-minute to an hour conversion.
Yeah.
Like, it took so long to turn that thing from the rocket into the operating room. I was like, nobody ever wanted to do it.
Seven-year-old, you had so many other things to do with your time.
Well, I remember asking my dad at one point to get me another one so I could just have the rocket
and the
operating room. And this was probably back then a $15 toy. I don't think
that.
It might have only been like $9.99.
If that. Have you?
But there was no way I was getting two of the same toy.
I'll have to send you the Sears catalogs. They have them. Like, you can go back through and see old Sears catalogs. I found like all of my toys from when I was a kid. My bicycles, my toys, my $6 million man, everything. And you're just like, oh.
I like to look at the Kenner, all the Star Wars toys, because I'm a big Star Wars geek.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the Death Star, which was like a huge toy back then, was like $14.99. I mean, those things were so cheap. The Land Speeder was like $4.99.
Yeah, but the average household income was like $9,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's scaled in comparison to nowadays, but it's just amazing to see how cheap those things were.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at the old Toys R Us catalogs and stuff. But back on track.
Yeah, back on track.
Let's get back to
buy
FOC.
Stock and Dynamite.
All right. We've got one more
the comic
new series.
Book, not the explosive.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to blow me up. Just to finish off the $6 million man, being from Dynamite, there's probably 17 different covers for that as well, and most stores won't order all of them, so if there's a specific one you want, you definitely want to go in and look at that. And then from Black Mask Comics, we've got a new series called The Billionaire Killers. Black Mask is one of those smaller publishers, but they tend to get a lot of traction. Like, some of their books have increased in value quite a bit. So maybe take a look at Billionaire Killers number one. And that's it for FOC for this week.
Cool.
So, recommended reading. Did you have anything you wanted to
talk about
first?
I'll go last.
You'll go last.
Yeah,
Go last. All right. So, once again, a book we talked about during FOC a few weeks ago was Oberon number one. And I mentioned at the time that I was excited to read this. So, when it came out today, I made a point to pick it up and read it. This is from Aftershock Comics, written by Ryan Parrott, with art by Miloš Slavković. Hopefully I said that right.
Miloš?
That's not Miloš. Miloš. Miloš.
The tennis player from Seinfeld?
Yeah. So, Oberon is the king of the fairies. So this is a book of fantasy, meets reality, basically. You've got a young girl who lives in the real world and, through a series of events, comes in contact with Oberon, who is visiting Earth, seemingly on a good mission, but he has ulterior motives, like you do when you're the king of the fairies.
Well, that's why they wrote the story.
Right. And he's trying to get this young girl to kind of trust him and help him out in his kingdom. So, but it was really cool. I liked it quite a bit. The art was really good. The writing was good. I thought it was going to be a fun series, and it didn't disappoint. So I do recommend going to pick that up. I'm not sure if it's an ongoing or if it's a mini series, but it seems to me like it's probably set up to be like a 5-issue series. But who knows where they go with it from here. And from Dynamite Comics, we have Red Sonja issue number 1. So, you know, Red Sonja relaunches every couple of years, it seems like. Her last series just ended at issue 25. It seems like every time they change creative teams, they relaunch the title. But just like Conan, I'm a huge Red... I love Conan. I love Red Sonja. I like the world that these characters live in. So I was on board for this. You know, I loved the last series. This one is written by Mark Russell. And the art is done by Mirko Kolak. Cover arts, there was, I don't know, at least 10 different covers for this book that came out today. So again, this is just Red Sonja. If you know Red Sonja, this is not a whole lot different than what you usually get. She's, you know, now set up as the queen of Hyrcania, or wherever it is that she's from. I don't know how you pronounce it. You know, they tricked her into becoming queen because somebody was coming to try to conquer and they didn't want to have to deal with them. They wanted her to do it. So that's basically where you set up for the first issue. But again, it had really, really good art. I liked it a lot. What I did like about it is you didn't see her at all in her chainmail bikini, which is, you know, the most impractical of all costumes.
Pretty impractical costumes in Wonder Woman, too.
Yeah, but I don't know if you saw the cartoon that was floating around this week where, you know, it was basically Red Sonja complaining about, you know, her costume compared to the guy next to her that had, you know, chainmail from head to toe.
Yeah.
And, you know, to make it even, instead of giving her chainmail from head to toe, they put the guy in a chainmail bikini. So it was pretty funny. But you know, she was running around in just a, you know, shirt and pants, which is what you should be running around in, and not chainmail bikinis. But the guy that writes this, Mark Russell, he did the Flintstone series for DC, and that was a really great series. Again, if you didn't read that, go pick up the trade paperbacks. It was really, really well done.
I think he did. You know, I think he did. See the one that did Lone Ranger as well.
Could be. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. It is Dynamite, yeah. So yeah, it definitely could have been him. But, you know, again, if you like Red Sonja, it's more of the same. If you've never read Red Sonja, it seems like a good jumping on point because, you know, it's a fresh team, so you didn't, you know, there's no setup that you had to learn about to read it. I recommend both of those books. So go pick them up, Oberon and Red Sonja.
Cool. All right. Mine is Absolute Flashpoint. If you don't know what that is, it's basically, you know, you probably know what Flashpoint is. That came out, what year did that actually come out? Like 12?
It would have been 2011-ish, 2010, somewhere around there.
So, well, yeah, that's why I was...
It was right before the New 50. I mean, it really launched the New 52.
Right.
Which, let's see, Rebirth started in 2016, which would have put New 52 around 2011. So somewhere around that, yeah, somewhere around that range.
So DC does these books, they're called Absolutes, and they take a story, a book, and give it a complete makeover. If you haven't seen the presentation they give on DC Universe, the book is unreal. It's 20% larger, and I'm about halfway through the story. I've read the story in the past, but I'm going through it like with a fine tooth comb. The introduction by Andy Kubert is worth the book alone, and the book was $70, but it's a hardcover, and like I said, it's 20% larger. Story by Jeff Johns. Andy Kubert does the introduction, and he really goes into finding putting the team together to do this book, and just the collaboration and everything that it took to do this story. And one of the reasons I wanted to buy it when I heard about it was how much Flashpoint really affected comic books in general and the DC universe. It's for a story like that to have to change the universe the way it did. And when you read this book, you're like, they didn't even know it was going to do what it did. They had no idea. They were just trying to come up with a good story, and it just, I think it just snowballed. And but anyways, to back to the book itself, this edition, like I said, it's 20% larger. And if you know, if you've been around the art world at all, it's like anytime you're drawing something, especially for publication or something like a comic, you always draw it larger. And then they shrink right. it down. And they always tell you, don't worry about when you shrink it down, everything, your mistakes, any flaws, they get smaller. And so when you draw these things so big and then you see them shrunk down onto the pages, you're like, oh, that looks so good. So to have your artwork blown back up, they don't say this in the book, at least not that I've seen yet. That could be scary. But they did an unbelievable job. From what I understand, they restored a lot of it. They redid some of it. Basically gave it a high-def makeover. And the stock that they used is... it's just top quality. And it's worth the $70, especially for a story like Flashpoint. They also do other big stories. You said you have Watchmen. I bought The Killing Joke as well, just to have that in the... And I'm going to look at some of the other ones I'll probably grab. But it's high quality, and it's not just the story. There's a ton of stuff in the back. It's almost like two books in one. You have the story itself, the comic, and then you have basically the making of, just the statues, the making of everything. It's really good.
The director's cut, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. Yeah. They've done it for a few titles, like you mentioned, The Watchmen has an absolute edition, and there's a lot of cool stuff added to it. And I haven't looked at the Flashpoint yet, so I don't know exactly what's in it. But I did look through the Killing Joke absolute edition, and there's a lot of cool stuff that they add to it. So if you're interested in the behind the scenes of the story, they're definitely worth picking up. And like you said, Flashpoint has been iconic, you know. I mean, it launched the whole New 52. It changed the DC universe. If you watch The Flash on Arrowverse, I mean, the whole thing is built on Flashpoint. So
they did,
you know,
yeah,
definitely
they did
a story
smaller
had,
version of it, but they
but
did
it's had
the
lasting effects.
Yes,
right. I mean, it's even really was part of the basis of what we were going to get in the DCU in the Snyderverse.
Right.
You know, if it had played out to completion, there would have definitely been some parts of Flashpoint mixed in to that as well. So it's a storyline that definitely had an impact and was very important for DC. And it's a really good read. I actually coincidentally just reread it last night. I didn't read the Ultimate Edition, but I guess I've heard it. They mentioned it recently on DC Daily.
Yes, they did. They talked about the Ultimate Edition. The Ultimate Edition just came out. The Absolute Flashpoint is called. Just came out on the 15th of January.
Yeah, so when they were talking about it the other day, it popped into my head, and I had to pull it out and read it again. So it is such a great story. It's really worth reading multiple times.
Yeah,
even if you've already read it. Like I said, I read it years ago, and I pulled it out and read it again, and it holds up. It's really good.
The movie's really good, too. The animated film, the animated version. I read it years ago. I watched the movie, and then now reading it again, like I said, I'm just being a bigger pages, bigger book. You just the artwork for me is like just going through every page. It's like, it's one thing to read it, but then to just sit there and look at each frame, it's so good looking.
Yeah, the art was great in that book anyways. You know, he does a really good job, and you can tell that he put some extra effort into that book.
Yeah, so. All right. That's it. That's all we got for recommended reading this week. You read anything else this week?
Well, I did read. Well, I read the Daredevil issue number one that came out today. I actually did get a chance to read that this afternoon.
So he's alive.
He's alive, of course. We all knew that anyways. Yeah. If you read the end of...
I haven't read it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, if you read the end of the last run, you kind of already knew he was still alive, even though...
Oh, that I did. Yeah,
the death of Matt Murdock. Yeah, I didn't read any of the Man Without Fear miniseries because it really didn't have anything to do with Daredevil, per se. It was more...
It was a tribute, like...
Yeah, it was all the supporting characters from his world. In their own miniseries, and honestly, it was just a ploy to get us from the end of one series and into the beginning of the next one.
They ployed me,
but yeah, but this was really good. You know, it was a double sized issue, so it was pretty hefty. It had really, really good artwork. I was really impressed with the art and the writing. Chip Zdarsky. It was kind of. It bounced back and forth between a quasi-origin, a retelling of his origin, but also mixed in with present-day storylines. The only thing I would say is, like, this was a top-secret project. Like, I think I mentioned it back when it was on FOC.
Yeah.
How Marvel wouldn't give us any information at all because it was so top-secret, and it had to stay that way. And after reading the book, I have no idea why this thing had to be top-secret. There was a twist on the very last page, which was great. I'm not going to tell you what the twist was, but I'm just saying there was a twist on the very last page. It's always, every comic has a twist on the last page.
Right.
Which, you know, they didn't have to put into the solicits for selling the book. They still could have given us some, I don't know why this thing had to be so top secret. That being, you know, the whole time I was reading it, I just kept thinking to myself, why could we have not known what this book was about ahead of time, because nothing groundbreaking was happening. But it was a good first issue. Like I said, it was a good retelling of the origin, and it was also a good setup, and you know, the twist at the end was great. It's going to propel us on for multiple issues, so I definitely recommend it. It felt a lot like the Netflix show.
Really?
In a way. Yeah, just, I don't know, to me somehow the art and everything felt very reminiscent of the show. It kind of felt like the same. And I know you're going to say it is the same character, but I mean, it felt like the same kind of portrayal of the character,
right?
So I said it was a really good book. I didn't add it to the recommended reading because I read it much later than I sent the notes out, but I did read that. As far as other things I read this week, I just was getting caught up on all of last week's books. So
yeah. I haven't read much. Nothing. I did read today. I read the new Young Justice number 2.
Yeah, I haven't got to that yet.
It's pretty good. I was kind of lost because it's been a month since the first one, so I had to read that. And it's like another introduction edition. You know, I think it's a good story. And it's same thing at the end. You're like, okay, can't wait for the next one. And then when the next one comes out in a month, you got all right. I got to go back and figure out where we are again.
Yeah, I just reread number one again so I could be ready for number two. Because when I read number one, it was a month and a half ago, and it was the advanced reader copy, and it was all in black and white, and it was kind of hard to... A lot of times we get those advanced copies, but it's kind of hard to really see what's going on because...
Do you ever color them in yourself?
No. No, I don't. But so I like to go back, and if it seems like something that I'm going to like, I always want to go back and read the finished version because the artwork is hard to discern a lot of times because it'll be half penciled, half inked. You know, one panel might be colored. You know, it's just all in different states of completion. So they're hard to you know, really
get into.
Yeah, really get into. So, but the first issue I liked. It looked fun. So I'm anxious to read number two.
Yeah, number two's got Wonder Girl.
Okay.
So it's kind of her introduction. And then it leaves on a cliffhanger, I guess. And then I also read the new, Batman 64, the crossover.
Batman 64,
the first of the crossover events.
The Price.
Yeah. That's good. It's very dark.
Yeah.
But it is Batman. Well,
Yeah, so it is Batman. It is, you know, a tie into Heroes in Crisis.
Yeah.
So
it's very loosely tied in. They talk about it, but this is a different, almost like a side mission type thing.
Okay.
Maybe it'll
so it's
tie,
like the, it's like the DLC. Yeah. It's not part of the main story, but
yeah, exactly. Maybe it'll tie in more. We'll have to see in Flash. Because that'll be the next one.
Well, like we said, I went on a bit of a rant about it a week or two ago. I'm hoping, to me, it better be tied in more than loosely, because they interrupted a current storyline to interject this in.
Well, they mentioned that. They do mention the current storyline as well, so they know they're part of it. So it's good. It's good. I mean, great art. It's, that entire series is. But
yeah, Batman is pretty top notch overall anyway. So.
Yeah. So. All right. Is that good?
Yeah.
Are we ready to get into some Punisher?
We went pretty deep on comics this week, but that's
all right. We are comic based.
Right, right. That's why I said that's all right.
Yeah. No. We started with football, so.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Let's get into some Punisher.
So I'll ask you first. What did you think of Punisher?
Well, this is a bright side.
Yeah, all right. So we felt kind of the same, I guess.
I liked it, but I feel like it was a flustercluck.
Yeah.
A flustercluck, or whatever they said. Because
flustercluck, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know. I feel like they didn't know if they wanted to be an action show or a drama, because it felt like they wrote a drama and then went, oh, crap, this is the Punisher. So we're going to go throw a few violent scenes in here and make it like the Punisher.
So the first thing I'll say is this is definitely a season that should have been 10 episodes and not 13.
I'd say 8.
Yeah, maybe even 8, because it really dragged out a long time. The second thing is we had two different villain stories happening, and one of them was really not integral to the story at all, which was the Jigsaw storyline.
Well,
this whole season was about the girl and Preacher John and the family and the senator. And that's
okay, so
really
we'll get
what the
right into spoilers.
We're
51 minutes in here. Let's do it.
But that's really what the crux of this season was about.
So, all right.
It started with the girl and it ended with the girl, and the whole subplot with Jigsaw, if it wasn't there, it wouldn't have been missed at all.
All right. You know what I'm saying? Tell you this. I was in about episode 8 and I was like, where's the villain? Because they really didn't have a villain. It was,
right.
He was, the entire story was, it was, like, there was no villain. It was, you know what? It was almost like, I thought of this in the middle of it, with Jigsaw, with Billy Russo. I felt like if they had handled them like Colonel Troutman wanted to handle John J. Rambo, and just let him be, and they'd pick him up working in a car wash in Jersey.
Right.
If they just left him alone. But they're like, oh, we've got to go get him. We've got to get the Punisher, bring him in. And that just blew everything up. It's like, he didn't even want anything to do with anybody.
Well, right. They kind of created him as a villain. Where, you know, when we meet him, he's in rehab, you know. He's in this very He's in this very contrived, a Harley Quinn type relationship, right? Where you have the classic doctor falls in love with their patient storyline, which you could see coming from a mile away. So that was very, very contrite, very obvious. But you're right. If they would have just, you know, you had Agent Madani, who just couldn't get over the fact that Russo was still alive.
Well, I don't blame her. That's the thing.
Right,
now,
but
if
she's
we're
the
get
one
into
that
it,
drags everybody back
right,
in.
Right.
What I'm saying is what you mentioned, where if she just leaves well enough alone, and I know she can't stand the fact that he's still alive and all of this, but if she just goes about her business, Billy Russo probably doesn't become an issue at all. You know?
Right.
He may not have even started going down this path in the first place, but she antagonized him, you know, continuously until it happened. But like I said, you could pull him out of the whole season and it doesn't make any difference because that's really not what the story was about.
But if you take him out of the season, you end up with like a 3-episode season between getting the girl, meeting the girl at the beginning, fighting the first people, and then solving the problem at the end with the preacher and getting his kids back.
Right,
boom,
but here's
done.
The thing. Here's what I kept thinking about when I was watching this. As I was getting to around episode 9, I kept wondering which villain he was going to deal with first so that they could focus the last half of the season on the other one. Like, I kept waiting for one of them to only last for, like, halfway through the show. And then, you know, they would pick up and go the other way.
No, they
but it didn't
them
happen that way. They
the
milked
way.
Them both out all the way to the end. And that's why I'm saying, like, we spent a whole half of an episode sitting up on a rooftop. We had all kinds of filler that was built into these episodes that really just kind of dragged out.
Yeah.
And was kind of boring. Because nothing was happening.
Right.
Whereas I feel like if he would have come in, dealt with Billy by about episode 6 or 7, which is all it really needed to be, and then spent the last 2 episodes dealing with Preacher John and, you know, his wacky family dynamic that was going on, and then ended, and that would have been it. And, you know, I think that would have been a good enough show. I think The Defenders was 8 episodes. Season 2 of Iron Fist, I think, was 10.
10.
So somewhere between 8 and 10 is where this definitely needed to be.
Yeah.
This definitely had the Iron Fist Season 1 feel, where it just dragged on too long.
Yeah, I wouldn't. It's better than Iron Fist Season 1, I think. I was more entertained. I mean, Iron Fist Season 1 was a slog. That was just awful. And it didn't help that the lead character was like just walking around going, I'm Danny Rand. I'm the immortal Iron Fist.
Right.
But please.
He had to tell everybody.
Yeah. It's like this was more entertaining than that.
It was. You're right. It was. But
it
had
wasn't
that
as
feel
good
to
as,
me.
I didn't think it was as good as Defenders. I didn't think it was as good as the Punisher first season. Any of the I'd say it was better than Luke Cage season 2. I don't know. I just think I felt like if they had just picked one, which is kind of you can't pick drama for Punisher. I just really felt like this was way more of a drama than it was an action show, which is what the Punisher should be.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree, but there was there was a lot of blood, and there was quite a bit of action.
Oh, yeah, they cracked a lot of bones. They had a lot of gore, but like you just said a minute, there was a lot of downtime. There was a lot of analyzing feelings, and a lot, I mean, you have a psychologist dealing with Billy and this, and then everybody else's feelings on why you do things. A 16-year-old girl is analyzing Frank. It's like
Well, and then, you know, honestly, the scenes with Madani and the psychiatrist—I can't remember her name.
Oh,
the
my
doctor—they just dragged on so long, and it's like, what are we doing here? Like, this is not the Punisher.
No. Apparently, you know, she has the psychiatrist there. She was so forgettable, I can't remember her name.
Yeah, I can't remember her name, but I know she was made out of rubber. Because
I was just
going to
say,
she's
a
super ball. Exactly, because she could bounce off the pavement and come back.
She did it twice.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
You knew at the beginning she's going out a window.
Right.
Like, it's the first time she leans up against it. Either Billy was going to throw her out a window or somebody.
But I didn't expect her to survive the second fall, you know?
No.
I get that she survived once when she was a kid.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, people do fall out of buildings and survive, but, you know, not twice in your lifetime, you know? She hit that pavement pretty hard.
Yeah.
You would think that.
Yeah.
She was in traction at the end of the show, so we don't know if she was going to walk again or anything like that. But just the fact that she lived through it twice was...
Yeah, her face was okay, though.
Exactly.
She went through a plate glass window, landed on the sidewalk face first, but apparently her arms took the brunt.
Right. Well, speaking of faces, by the way, have you ever seen Jigsaw in the comics?
And that was not Jigsaw.
Exactly. It's like, you know, we've got this actor who's a good-looking dude, and, you know, we want to make sure he stays a good-looking dude. So we just, you know, put a couple of scars around his face.
On the outside.
But then he has to – but he's so horribly disfigured that he has to wear a mask. It's kind of like the Doctor Doom.
Right.
Where, you know, he wears this metal mask because he's so disfigured. And then, you know, when he finally takes off the mask – he's got one little scar on his cheek, and he looks perfect.
Yeah.
But, you know, his hubris in his mind makes him seem like he's deformed. And that's kind of the way I felt with Billy Russo. Because I've seen guys on the street look worse than him in my real life.
Yeah.
And we didn't call him Jigsaw. So that again, was something that was kind of...
Yeah, they could have done a better job. But I didn't mind the mask. I get the mask.
No, I get the mask, too. But when he finally took it off, which I knew ahead of time because it was already an uproar on Twitter that he wasn't nearly scarred up enough. But even when I saw it, I was expecting more than what we really got.
Yeah, I was expecting, or I would have liked to have seen. I wasn't expecting any more because, like you, I saw it on Twitter. But I would have liked to have seen more scars, more Jigsaw than.
Right.
And they made the one reference in the show to Jigsaw, but.
Right. They didn't really even call him that, but if you're a comic reader, you know, that's who he is. And then the other thing too that really disappointed me and. Now I'm drawing a blank because I can't think of his name, but Punisher's sidekick that is always with him in the van directing all his stuff.
Micro?
We didn't see him at all. Micro, yeah. We didn't see him at all. It's like, where the hell was he through the whole season?
Yeah.
You don't get a Punisher comic at all without this dude. It's like Alfred to Batman, you know. He's always there. Why didn't we have him?
Well, I think it, like, in the show, they clearly are going off on, you know, he was trying to get away. And that's one
right,
of the things.
Right, but once you end up back in New York City.
One of the drama things that they tried to show is that he was leaving the life. He was trying to become something that he isn't. That poor woman at the beginning and her son that goes out for pancakes, you know, I thought we'd at least reference back to them at the end.
Well, I thought for sure, we would see her at the end. And I was honestly a little disappointed that we didn't. But I get it. He's the Punisher and he's always going to be the Punisher.
Right. He's not going to deny his calling, his life. And that's what because when he does, people get hurt. So, or people close to him get hurt. I get that. So I think we're going to have to sound the alarm here.
Uh-oh.
Controversy. I have never, ever laughed or been actually embarrassed for a TV show than I was at the ending.
It was pretty bad.
He basically walked. I was so mad at that ending.
Yeah.
That I had to replay it for my wife. And she was like, are they going to dance? And I said, I paused it and I looked at her. I go, that's exactly what I thought. It looks like he just went in there and shot up the dance sequence from Thriller.
Right.
Like, I was waiting for those two gangs to turn around.
Well, West Side Story, right? Isn't that West Side Story?
That's what Jen said. She goes, West Side Story. I was like, well, yeah, Thriller. And then they're like, I was like, what the heck? It was, and then the like,
yeah, that,
was he,
that
Rambo?
Was worse than that was worse than worse than Darth Vader screaming no.
Yeah, I was.
It was bad.
That was I thought the way the kids were acting, and that's the thing, is they were kids.
Yeah,
I thought he was going in there, and like this was going to be a joke, and it was going to be like paintball, and he opened a paintball place. But instead, he pulls the guns out and mows them down. I thought that was okay. I'm done. That was, I thought it was awful. Absolutely
it was.
Awful.
It was an awful ending. And you're right. It's like we didn't get the ending we wanted, which was him going back after the girl, and instead we get this terrible ending. That I don't know.
That's why I say I feel like they made a drama and then we're like, oh crap, we got to make this the Punisher. And it was a good drama. It's just not what you expect when you sit right. down to, you're like, all right, guns and violence. And you're like, what? Psychology?
Right.
Wait a minute.
I
love psychology. I took it right. in college. I love that stuff, but not when I'm sitting down for that.
Right. Well, and, you know, again, we'll have to suspend our beliefs for a comic book TV show. But let's talk about Preacher John for just a second. now, you know, we've talked about it a few times when we reviewed Daredevil, but can this guy take a beating or what? Like, if he had one more bullet or
well,
stab
all,
wound
they all
or...
Can.
Well, yep. I know, but I mean, this guy, I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, he's pulling, like, you know, 87 pieces of shotgun shrapnel out of his thigh and
teeth out of his forehead.
Teeth out of his forehead, and he's got open, he's got gaping wounds open that are just bleeding all over the place. He's getting shot. He's getting stabbed. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, that's. And how about Frank breaks his hand?
Just yeah.
Drives to, or flies to New York, and it's healed.
Right.
Okay, now I'm good. Takes the cast off, which never was really set. It was just kind of like taped up in a police department.
Right. Well, and then what's the cop's name? Not a,
the,
not,
yeah.
Not Madani, but the cop.
The cop that he's yeah. in all the series.
Right. So that guy goes over a bridge from the front seat of a car that smashes straight down into the ground. The front of that car gets smushed up like an accordion, but yet somehow he's not dead.
Nope.
He doesn't even really have any visible wounds on him.
No, like, no.
He's just
he should have been.
He should have been like.
He should have been crushed against the divider.
Exactly, and then. Like, two episodes later, he's not even limping. Like, he's just walking around, which is literally happened in the space of maybe, like, one day's worth of time on the show. And he's completely healed for the rest of the season. Like, nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that was what I just looked it up. Detective Sergeant Brett Mahoney.
Mahoney. Mahoney, that's right.
Yeah. But that accident, when they went off of that bridge... I thought for sure, I'm like, oh, Frank's going to lose his arm.
Or something,
I'm like,
right?
I'm like, how could you be hanging by a handcuff in the back of an ambulance and the ambulance takes a nosedive off a bridge and you come out with a separated shoulder?
Well, and why did the handcuffs open?
No, he opened like, them. He was still,
oh, did
yeah,
he? Okay.
He was on the ground and he got the, he took Mahoney's jacket, got
that's
the key
right.
out
okay.
of it. So yeah. That part was realistic.
Yeah. Well, you know.
No, usually I don't pick this stuff apart like that.
Well,
but
I don't
like,
either, but I was thinking nobody survives that fall. I thought for sure Mahoney was dead.
Yeah, exactly. No, he went.
Because that's how he was going to get away, right? Because the cop that was taking him to jail died.
Right.
And that would have made sense to the story.
Right.
But it didn't happen.
But in this entire series, what turned out to be probably the most entertaining part of the whole thing is just like laughing at the injuries and right. them bouncing back from them, literally with the doctor bouncing off the concrete, but well, bouncing back from injuries.
Well, now, honestly, that fight with Preacher John and Frank, you know, in the
hotel?
Well, not in the hotel. That one, too.
I love
but
that one. They're each in a room, and then they switch.
Right, shoot, right. But outside the trailer, when they were fighting, basically the last scene where they fought, I mean, Preacher John has a chain wrapped around his fist,
well,
and he's punching him in the head. Like, nobody survives these.
You know what I liked about that? Now, I'm going to actually get into what this what I thought was good about that. Was that was a callback to the opening scene, one of the opening scenes when he got in a, remember he got, when Frank got in the fight in the bar, he took his belt off and he wrapped it around his arm so he could do the same thing. And I thought that was really good at the end.
But I thought that was more to deflect the knives that the other people had.
It was.
It wasn't so much to inflict pain with the belt.
No, but it...
It was to protect his arm from the...
Right, but they both did what I thought when I saw Preacher do it at the end. I thought of the callback to Frank doing it at the beginning, and I was like, they're the same person. Right. And I picked up on that right away, and then you come to find out they beat the crap out of each other. Then they talk to each other and they figure out they are the same person. He's only doing this for his kids. And he, that's the ending right there. They basically say, what would you have done for your kids? And he's like, Frank's like, anything. So.
Right. But the Punisher still kills him. If he was really the Punisher, he doesn't let that guy live. I don't care what his motivations were.
Well, yeah.
Like, the Punisher as a character would still kill him. I liked it from a storytelling standpoint that he let him live.
And went and saved his kids.
This was a bad dude, you know.
Yeah, they went and saved his kids.
Right.
But
which the Punisher would do. Like, I feel
the Punisher would kill himself.
Like,
I mean, not himself, but,
I'm saying,
another person doing what
he
does.
All the way up until they reveal at the end where a Preacher was still alive. That was all in character. Like, Frank still would have gone and saved those kids because, the mother and dad were the bad guys anyways. But then when they kind of reveal that he let Preacher John live, I felt like that was a little out of character for the Punisher. I understand why they did it from a TV show storytelling standpoint.
Yeah.
But this is a character that, you know, has no remorse. Kills you if you're a bad guy. Preacher John was a bad guy, regardless. Even before his kids were in danger, he was a white supremacist. He was doing bad stuff.
Right.
You know, he wasn't a good dude. So I feel like he shouldn't have let him live. But, you know, I understand
that's so minor from the script,
why they did it. Well, it is minor, but, well, yeah. I felt like so much of it was out of character for the Punisher. That I guess doesn't really bother me too much, but I did love the part though. The other scene where you're kind of expecting the opposite is you kind of think he's going to show a little. He shows mercy to Preacher John because if it was his kids, but when he meets up with Billy, who's dying in the gym,
really
just wants Frank to. He just kind of wants to apologize and have Frank just sit down with him until he dies, and he pulls out a gun and blows him away.
Yeah, he pops two more in him, and
I
thought that was great. I thought it was great.
That's not what I expected, because I actually kind of expected him to sit down, and just kind of sit there with him till he died, and then go on his way. But he's the Punisher, so he did what the Punisher does.
Right.
But then at the end, he acts completely out of character because he doesn't do what the Punisher does.
Right.
So,
but that's what I thought was really good. That it, like you said, that's why I liked that part. Is it did it surprised me? I thought he was going to say like I thought we were going to get that whole, you know, we're brothers. You did, but I'm like I could never. I would have shot him too. The guy killed your wife and kids.
Well, but even
there's
that
no
whole
brothers.
I was actually super surprised that Curtis called Frank in the first place. Like, I really thought Curtis was going to go down.
Well, I don't think Curtis wanted to kill him. And
I think he wanted to go down. And I thought he would go down and sit with him while he died. Because all Billy was asking for was for somebody to be with him when he died, so right. he didn't die alone. He wasn't looking for forgiveness or anybody to save him. He knew he was going to die. But, and, you know, Curtis had this whole arc through the whole season where, you know, it was all about forgiveness. And it was right. even the guy he shot on the rooftop, he wanted to go sit next to him and save him because he believed in that. So for him to call Frank in the first place really surprised me because that's not how he expected that right. to go down. So that whole scene was great. I loved it, like you right. said, because it was so unexpected. And I thought it was right in character. It was perfect. But I don't know. There was so much about it that just this whole season felt really off.
Yeah, to me. I was, and it's
especially coming off of Daredevil season 3.
Yeah,
which was such a high, and you know. Maybe they didn't know they were going to get canceled, but it's definitely a show that went out strong and went out on a high note and really makes you regret that you're not getting season 4. I don't regret that we're not getting season 3 of The Punisher. I'm not looking forward to another season. And
that's too bad, too, because I like the characters. I like the
Me too.
I like the people playing the characters. I like, you know, Frank Castle. I like John Bernthal as him. I think I am as attached to him as Frank as I am to Charlie Cox as Daredevil.
Right, for sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like,
because season 1 was so good,
yeah,
I thought.
And even in this, I thought his acting, I thought his portrayal of him was really good. I just really... And that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't have a problem so much with the story or the acting. I, like, with Iron Fist, I had a huge problem with the acting and the story. Right. This one here, I just felt like it was two stories and they didn't pick one. They should have just picked one. But I thought everybody did a great job at what they were doing. It's like, even Madani, I was like, you know, she got shot in the head, so you could see why she would act the way she was acting. I thought Ben Barnes as Billy Russo, I thought he did a phenomenal job playing Jigsaw. I mean, yes, he didn't have the face, but boy, was he messed up in the head. You know, he was so confused. So many times putting his head into his hands because he just doesn't know. He couldn't remember things. But he did such a good job acting that out that it was just so much of that.
Right.
And, you know, this is The Punisher. I wanted the vest. I wanted guns. I wanted more of that and less of the, you know, the drama.
Right.
So is that everything?
I think so. I mean, I guess overall, you know, we had a lot of negatives to say, but I mean, overall, Yeah, I thought it was enjoyable. You know, it was definitely watchable. I wouldn't steer people away from watching it.
No.
Just kind of be aware that it's not as good as season 1, and it's definitely not on par with
season
3.
Well, if you're listening to us, you've probably already watched it anyways, because we spoiled everything all the way through.
If you agree with us, disagree with us, you know, if you have a different take, maybe we're completely off base, tell us why we're off base.
Yeah, exactly. I look forward to it. I remember going through Iron Fist and I watched season 1, and because it's part of a shared universe and stuff, I knew I had to get down there and watch it. And
right.
I had no obligation. It's not like we were doing a podcast back then, so I didn't need to watch it. I just knew I wanted to, but it was a chore. This was not a chore to watch. It's just not what I expected.
I plowed through it in two sittings. I mean,
wow!
It's not like I had a hard time watching it, but I just felt it dragged a lot at times. And maybe it was because I was on hour number 8 or 9 in a row. Yeah.
No,
by the time
it dragged
I got there.
For me at times
but
too. And
I think
did like
it's still, yeah,
one or two at a time.
Right.
But all right. So yeah, if you agree with us or don't agree with us, great. Let us know on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. You could email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. Obviously, listening to us on the iTunes at the Brightside Chat, Google Play. We're on Facebook, too.
Facebook.com/TheBrightsideChat.
Nice. So that's it for the Punisher this week. What do we want to do next
week? Our punishing review of the Punisher.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. I'm not going to put that on Twitter.
Putting the pun in Punisher.
All right, that's
putting the pun back in Punisher.
All right, that's enough for this week. Next week to be determined.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, we haven't wrapped up Young Justice yet. We could do that, or who knows.
Yeah, we'll probably talk Young Justice and a bunch of other things too. But we'll hit on Young Justice because we haven't talked about that. We haven't ended up that season has taken its hiatus. All right. Sounds good.
All right, man.
Have a good week.
You too.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors who we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.